News Bureau. This is Gordy.
Gordy Coleman.
Yes, sir.
This is Brent Kelly. I wrote you, I don't know when I wrote you, a couple, 3 weeks ago, asking if I could interview you.
Yes, okay, from Lexington.
Right, yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I remember the letter. Yes, sir, I sure do.
Is this a time we could do it?
How much time are you talking about?
Well, it depends on how long you answer. Maybe 20 minutes or so.
Well, okay, well, because, you know, I got to get ready for the game. We got a game, and I'd be glad to talk with you. Yes, sir, okay.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll ask you, I don't know what I'll ask you, 10, 12 questions, and just answer whatever you want to answer, and if you don't want to answer, don't.
Sure, no problem.
Okay. You were a football player at Duke.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was All-State in Maryland my junior and senior year, and I was an All-American my senior year, and I elected to go to Duke only because of the fact that I was, you know, Maryland more than me, but they wouldn't promise me that I could, you know, play baseball in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things where they said, Duke, if you're fortunate enough to make the baseball team, then you can get that spring football practice, and that's basically why I went down there.
2 years?
No, I wouldn't want to. I tell you what happened with that. You know, there was a time, and this is probably before you were born, but there was a time it's unlimited bonuses type thing.
Right.
And each club was trying to outbid the other one, and what happened was the clubs with all the money was buying all the talent. So what they did was they made a decision, if you get more than $4,000 in the way of a bonus, that you had to sit on the big league bench for 2 years.
Right.
So you took up the roster space. It was the last year before I got underway, and I thought, I better get mine in ruin. So.
So you did get a bonus.
Yeah.
Was this, now, unfortunately, I was very much born at that time.
I wish I was.
Okay, was this the time that the bonus rule changed, it seemed, weekly at that time? There was a point where I know when Kurt Simmons and Robin Roberts signed, that they were allowed to be farmed out, but they had to be called up at the end of the year. A little bit after that, the boys could be signed to a certain level, and if they were dropped below that, they became free agents. Were there any restrictions on your signing?
No, other than regards to the fact that I remember the first day, Cleveland, because I signed with Cleveland, they had signed a young man by the name of Kenny Kuhn, K-U-H-N.
Right.
Kenny was from Lexington, Kentucky. Louisville, I'm sorry.
Right.
And he had to go up there and sit for 2 years. I think in the course of these 2 years, he had something like 20-some odd at bats. And, of course, you know, that's 2 years out of your playing career. And as I was working my way up, Kenny was on his way down. We played together at the double-A level. And, I mean, your skills just, you know, diminish after a point of that. But there were several cases where if you did that, and the clubs liked the talent so much that they took the chance. In fact, the Reds had one here, I think. They had a shortstop by the name of Hendricks or something.
Mm-hmm.
But there were several cases where that did take place. But boy, I tell you, when they really put a hurt on the ballpark.
Oh, it was disastrous. As a matter of fact, I'm working on a book on the bonus baby era now.
Oh, is that right?
Right. And I probably talked to 25 of the young men who were captive for 2 years.
Oh.
There's the pretty much unanimity, if that's the word, in opinion that it was a pretty stupid thing, although some of them, of course, K-Line and some of the others certainly overcame that, but most of them felt it was a kiss of death.
Well, I tell you what, you had to be an awfully talented young man, thinking back to what high school baseball was like, to step in from high school and get to the big league level.
Oh, sure.
I look back because at the time that, you know, when we were playing ball then, you're talking about D-ball, C-ball, B-ball, you know, A-ball, and, you know, it took you a day just to soon, it was to be 4 or 5 years to learn your apprenticeship.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know today, if you're 19, they send you out to rookie league, you have a good year, they invite you to spring training, you have a good year, you come north, and, you know, the Reds have had two here. Johnny Bench was here at 19. Gary Nolan was here at 19.
Those are exceptional talents.
Yes, you have to be like K-Line. You have to be an exceptionally talented.
Also, K-Line and others had an advantage of being on a poor team. The guys who went to a pennant race, no matter what kind of talent they had, they weren't going to get a lot of playing time, unfortunately.
That's a pennant race.
As a matter of fact, I spoke with John Antonelli yesterday.
Oh, did you?
And very outspoken individual, to say the very least, but he signed in when the Braves were in the pennant race, and then Paul Gill and Joey Malfitano were in a pennant race, and yeah, that's got to be horrible. And Jim Cott, I spoke with him, he elected not to take a bonus simply because he could go to the minors because he didn't think he could compete at that point.
Yeah, I think Jim in the minors, you know, he's been around forever, it seems like. But I saw him when he was in the Washington chain at Chattanooga.
Mm-hmm.
On our way up Kitty Kitt.
That's been a few moons ago, hadn't it?
Yes, sir. And, you know, and of course, going through the Chattanooga club at which he was on, and You know, Harvey Killebrew had been there, and the Bob Allison, and the, they had some real talent come through there.
They sure did. Washington always did seem to have the minor leaguers, and maybe as a rookie, but they sort of faded.
Get to the Senators and things change.
Okay, I want to talk about you, and I don't want to talk about those guys. You're in the minor leagues. Well, they got you out, but it was tough. You had a .329 minor league batting average. Evidently, you were not particularly stressed.
Well, I'll tell you what. I signed my first year, and I played at, I joined the ball club at Reading, Pennsylvania, and at that time, they had a first baseman at Reading by the name of, Joe Altobelli.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was Cleveland signed four bonus boys, all of us at the same time. They sent us all to Reading, Pennsylvania. We signed a pitcher named Gary Kolod, K-O-L-O-D. We signed a shortstop by the name of Rabbit Mayhew. They signed five of us. Dick Farrell, his son John, pitched for the Indians here recently.
Mm-hmm.
And we signed Earl Averill's son, Earl Averill Jr.,
right.
And yours truly. They sent five of us to that club at one time. And Kirby's ball club was at, they were in a pennant race, and of course, Altavelli was an established, you know, first baseman, hitting 300, and they had a pitching staff that consisted of a Herb Score and those kind of people, so they had a really good ball club. But so they wanted to get my bat in the lineup somewhere, so Kirby Farrell had me come out every afternoon, 2:30, 3 o'clock at the ballpark, and he hit me fly balls until I couldn't run anymore, you know. And then when the playoffs got underway, he put me in the outfield. And so I signed as a first baseman, but they put me in the outfield. I go to spring training in 54 and 55, and I played in the outfield. I went to Spartanburg in 54 and hit my, whatever it was, 318.
318, right, 100 RBIs.
Okay, so we come to contract time, and the gentleman was running the farm system at the time says, Gordy, we're going to have to send you back to B-ball. And I said, why? And he said, because you haven't proven that you can hit left-handed. I said, well, if I go back to B-ball and I don't hit 300, you're going to say it was a fluke. If I go back and hit 350, you're going to say, well, you should have. So I'll tell you what, if you hit 350, we'll take you to the big league camp. So I hit 349 at Keokuk in the Three Islands.
Mm-hmm.
And he took me to big league camp the next year. That was the year that Dick Wirtz had polio. And they didn't know if he was ever going to play baseball again. So what they did again was they took three young outfielders and converted us back into first base. So I went to Mobile, Alabama in 56 to learn to play first base again. I was down in 56, had a pretty good year, as you saw.
Had a great year, yeah.
And then they wanted me to go to winter ball down in Cuba to get the final polish to come to the big league camp again. But at that time, you had to notify your draft board that you were leaving the country. And they said, son, you're not going too far. Sam wants you.
He got you.
So in January of that year, he got me, and I spent 2 years soldiering. And when I got out, I had to hit some pretty good minor league years, but I was fortunate enough in the military to get a chance to play baseball for a couple of years. It wasn't, you know, big league baseball, but it was baseball, and I got a chance to play. So I get out, they take me to spring camp in 59, and here again, they sent me down to San Diego, which was an Indian AAA club at the time. And they had a fellow there that had some big league camps, and one of the finest hitters of spring training I ever saw, Rudy Regalado.
Uh-huh.
Rudy the Red Hot Rapper. Every year in spring training, he hit 900 in spring training.
And through April. Then it folded.
Okay, so he's down at San Diego, and Ralph Kiner was the general manager, and he decides he's going to platoon up, me against the right, him against the left. Well, undoubtedly, Cleveland didn't agree with that because I was still in quotes considered a prospect. They wanted me to play on a daily basis, so they shipped me from San Diego spring training to Mobile again.
Mm-hmm.
And I go down there, and that was the year that I won the triple crown.
Yeah, they sure hated to see you come down there, I bet.
Well, it was the type of thing that was great because, you know, it was one of those years you dream about when every day you go to the ballpark, you just know you can get a couple of hits. Everything you do right in a situation like this falls into place, and it was one of those years you just dream about.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a super year. Now, the image of you today, if somebody says Gordy Coleman, they picture you as a lumbering first baseman. Well, you evidently didn't lumber because you got a lot of triples, especially in the minor leagues. So you're not going to lumber and get triples. You must have had a little quickness.
The fall team, because I am a pretty good-sized fellow now. You know, I'm just a big man, and I'm unfortunately bigger than I should be. But nobody, well, of course, from the scouts that saw me play back in that era. But there was a time when I was in high school when I was playing football. I was I had to run a 10-flat 100. And with me hitting left-handed, and of course, the years that I played in the Southern Association at that time, no black players were allowed in the Southern Association.
Right.
And I was the fastest guy in the league from home to first, you know, or on the, well, I don't know what the time was, but I was voted the fastest guy in leg at first base.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a time that I did run well. I played somewhere between probably 2.5 and 2.10 at that time. And then we, you know, as time progressed, I get bigger. But there was a time I did run pretty good.
Yeah, well, it looks like it in the just looking at the statistics. You came to Cleveland the end of the year, and Vic Power was there, but they couldn't get you out.
Well, I'll tell you what, I had a chance to play the last week of the season, and Frank Lane was the general manager there at the time, and he got me going to Cuba to play winter ball because he said to me, you're going to go down there, put on the final touches, and you're going to come back and be my first baseman next year, which sounded great to me. I didn't want to go, but if that's the way it was going to be, my chance to get in the big leagues, that's what's going to happen. Well, you know, as December rolled around, I get traded, and I'm over here. Cleveland had a surplus because Wirtz was still out, Vic Power was still there. Cincinnati weren't pitching. McCall, Cal McLeish comes over. You know, he's a 19-game winner.
Mm-hmm.
They give up a second baseman, so they got to have somebody to play second. Billy Martin's in the DL, and I'm the throw-in. Robinson had played first here at 59. He had told Gabe Paul, the general manager, he did not want to play anymore. And basically, that's how I was thrown into the deal.
Well, Lane traded everybody. He traded
a lot of people.
Yeah. Anybody held still more than 2 minutes was gone.
One of the greatest, I guess, when he traded managers, that was all time.
Well, yes. Do you realize that when he was with the Cardinals, he tried to just trade Stan Musial?
Didn't know that.
No, Gussie Bush, or whichever one of the Bushes was in charge at the time, said no shot.
Okay, yeah, you know, when I was at Cleveland, he unloaded the Colonnade.
Yeah.
That's never been forgiven. Yeah.
No, Cleveland fans point to that as the demise of the franchise.
Oh, even though Harvey Key was a great ball player.
Oh, the charisma wasn't there. That was the one thing.
You know, Rocky was he was just a body socks idol. The girls all loved him.
Yeah, tall, dark, handsome, and good.
There you go.
Yeah. Not a problem that I have, but that's all right.
I didn't have that either.
Okay, your first full season. You went to Seattle. You did well. They brought you up midseason. Your first full season.
See what happened. I was in spring training, 60. I had a very unusual, unorthodox batting stance. I guess you consider it a bailout. In my first day in spring training, we had a batting instructor at that time by the name of Wally Moses.
Mm-hmm.
Wally Moses says, kids, you can't hit like that. So they take the approach, you've got to make some adjustments at the plate. Well, they changed this all around for me. And to get to the point in spring training, I was so bad. I couldn't get a ball out of the batting cage. In the exhibition games, I think it was like over 20 without a ball at the infield.
Oh, man.
So Dave Paul calls me and he says, Gordy, we're going to have to send you back to the minors, not because you can't hit, but because you've lost confidence in your hitting. So I go home, I get permission to go home for a couple of 3 days. I just figured, you know, I had a chance to make this thing and I just do it. I'm about to turn in my uni, really. And my wife convinced me. She said, Gordy, you're already in shape for one more year. Let's see what happens. So they sent me AAA at that time with Seattle for the Reds.
Mm-hmm.
Dick Sisler was managing the Seattle Ball Club. The year before when I'd won the Triple Crown, Dick had managed at Nashville in the Southern. And he had seen me with my unorthodox batting stance. He met me at the airport when I came to Seattle. I drove back to the hotel with him. He says, Gordy, I don't care if you stand on your head, just start swinging. First night I went 4-for-4, and within a couple of months I was back up.
And you were very well up there. I think Dick Sisler, from what I know, what I've observed, was a very underrated managerial prospect.
I tell you one thing, he is probably the finest man that I enjoyed playing for Dick Sisler. I played for him in Seattle. I played for him here. Dick Sisler was one of the finest gentlemen that I ever played for. The unfortunate thing with Dick Sisler is concerned. He is such a nice fellow. The unfortunate thing is players took advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to be one of the guys, and he was. But when he had to make a decision, some of the veteran players didn't pay a whole lot of attention to him.
That hurts.
But he was one of the greatest. He was a super, super fellow.
Not a good ball player, too.
Yes, sir. He had a pretty good career.
Mm-hmm.
This is his kid.
Well, when you came up, first year as a regular, World Series. You had a good year. You were very much, obviously not solely responsible, but you certainly contributed a great deal because they didn't make it the previous year without you on a full-time basis.
I'll tell you what, that was one of those ball clubs. You know, we had the tag, the rag tags, the rag muffins, whatever type thing. And we had several guys in the ball club. You know, to win a pennant, you're going to have a lot of guys having a good year. And basically, we had guys that had career years. And we had a pretty good ball club, but you look at the talent on that ball club, I mean, the Poses and the Lynches and the, you know, Gus Bells, Beta Pitts and Frank Robinson. Augie Freese, the trade we get him from, So it all those things were together. That was a fun summer. And you figure next year we won more games we did in 61, but the Mets beat us a doubleheader at the end of the season and knocked us out. We had a better record in 62.
Well, it was, right, it was a good team. It could have, well, the breaks didn't go your way as much, but it was probably as up until the mid-70s as good a period as the Reds had ever had.
And I tell you what, you know, the thing was in 61, 62, I played regular, whatever the games were, the 150, 60, whatever it was. And then you know what happened? We come to us in 63, and I went 0 for 32 to start the season.
Oh, my Lord.
And then I went, I broke my slump against Bob Gibson. I hit a home run, a double, I was 2 for 2. I think, boy, this thing's all behind me. And then I go 14 more times without him. And then they decided at that point, we're going to have to start platooning you because you're not hitting left-handers. Well, I wouldn't hit anybody, really. But when I look back to the 62 season, the season before, of the 28 home runs I hit 9 of them off left-handers. So they designed me that you're going to be a platoon player, and from that point on, that's basically what happened.
That's, when you get that stigma, it's hard to shake.
It sure did. And of course, Sisler came back as the manager in 65. You know, Hutch died, and he became the manager in 65. And then 65 is the best year I ever had up here because the fact he's put me in the lineup, you know, and I was out there. And that's the year I hit 302. But it depends on a manager having confidence in you. And it would seem to be the type of thing that says, Gordy, you don't have to worry about Gordo before, you're going to be my first baseman. So, you know, you go out there your second or third time up, you're 0-3, 0-2. Man, I got to get a hit, I'm going to be in a bench. That's a tough way to play baseball.
Yeah. Constantly pressing is not good in anything, especially in something like a competitive sport. You remember your World Series home run?
Yes, sir, I sure do. I'll never forget it. I knew that the scouting report would maybe be keep the ball away from me because of my stance. I love the ball on the inside part of the plate. In my first at bat against Terry, I had gone up there and I worked a count to 3-2, and I took a fastball low and away and tried to pull it and hit a weak ground ball to second base. So I came back to the bench, and Jerry Lynch, who used a great big bat, he used an R43, 36-36. So Bubs take his big bat up there and try to tear the pitcher's head off, rip the ball right back up the middle. And the first pitch, that's exactly what I tried to hit a line drive up the middle of the ball, carried 407 feet.
Oh, my Lord.
I got out in front and got the big head of that bat. It was a big bat, and that, you know, jerked the ball out.
Yeah, you don't find a 36-ounce bat nowadays.
Well, see, back in the old days, a lot of the guys used 34, 5, and 6.
Yeah.
Today, everybody's, you know, 31, 32 type thing.
Yeah.
But a lot of guys in that era used great big bats.
And they hit the ball more often. They're missing it an awful lot nowadays.
Well, see, we weren't embarrassed to choke up. That was the thing. We would go up on the bat to protect the plate. I mean, that was the old theory, cut up to the minor leagues. You get two strikes, protect the plate, get the bat on the ball, keep the ball on the plate. That was the theory. Today, striking 150 times doesn't bother anybody.
No, I don't see how it can help but bother them, but yeah, you're right. Another game that year in 61 against Milwaukee, you had a big
career.
Yeah, 8 hits, won the first game.
Yes, sir.
You hit it off a pretty decent left-handed pitcher, right?
I tell you what, if you looked at my credentials against Warren Spahn in my career, it was about 800, I think.
This wasn't really. Gee,
last year it was something like 14 for 16, and the second year like 16 for 18. He never, ever did get me out. And he said in his Hall of Fame installation, they asked him about the greatest hitters he's ever faced. And he said the greatest hitter he ever faced was Musial. He said, but sometimes I got him, sometimes he got me. He said, but one guy that I never did figure out that just wore me out was Truett. I used to get, it was nothing to get, in fact, I've got a bat, this true story, it's in my rec room at home over my mantle, and it's signed to my hero, signed Warren Spahn. Yeah, there it is.
Oh, that's pretty good. Very few people could zero in on him for much time.
He was in town here for an old-timers dinner. He came up to me and he says, Gordy, you want to take me to lunch? And I said, why is that, Warren? He says, because I kept you in the big leagues 5 years longer than you should. It was really strange.
You got him. Was there anybody that was particularly tough for you?
Oh, yes, several of them. Probably Chris Short with the Phillies was awfully tough. Sandy Koufax, I couldn't hit with a boat paddle. I mean, that was just a gimme. I just couldn't handle it.
A lot of fellas fell in that category.
After the first two years they came up, Warren Marichal challenged me with his fastball, and I turned him around on 2 or 3 different occasions, and he stopped throwing it, went to the other stuff, and then he became an awfully tough at that because he wouldn't throw me the fastball. He threw all the other stuff.
Mm-hmm. He was super.
He was a super pitcher.
You played with and against an awful lot of awful good ball players. You played with some great ones. Who was the best one in your opinion?
Well, I tell you what, when you look at the whole, you know, full package of the whole thing, I guess you'd have to say number 24 with the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
What anything the man couldn't do. He could run, hit, field, throw, hit with power in that ballpark at San Francisco, probably keyed him out of about 50 home runs.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was the most complete player that, now I was in the American League to see, you know, the Mantles and those kind of people. But over in this league at the time, I don't think it was any question that Willie Mays was the best player in this league.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Pittsburgh wasn't too bad either.
Clemente, yeah.
The guy, you know, he had a setting ability. And the thing about him was, you know, he didn't have a strike zone. You couldn't waste pitches on him because he didn't know what he was going to swing at. He hit balls over his head, balls were bounced up, and he'd swing in. But he got the battle.
I've heard people say with a little bit of discipline, he'd have batted 350 every year.
I would tell you what, he had the talent, right? He just had a, he was a super athlete.
What about the best pitcher? You mentioned Spahn, Marichal. What about the just the one pitcher you thought was the best?
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring up that question. I think the hardest throwing man that I ever saw, and I played with him. We were kids together. We played semi-pro at Minnesota one summer. I played with him 2 years in the minor leagues. Herb School.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the, with the eye incident?
Yes.
He was probably the hardest throwing man that I ever saw. Consistently. Well, we're talking about not just for one pitch, but we're talking about for a ball game where he just could stand up and bring pee on you. It was him. But the toughest at bat to me, like I say, was Koufax. And he, along with some other people, the ugly at bats was a knuckleball. I mean, that's an old Hoyt Wilhelm type thing where you just couldn't be embarrassed to death.
Who'd you have knuckleballs besides Wilhelm around there?
Oh, geez, we're talking about
Bobby Tiffenow, I guess, was in, wasn't he?
Yeah, and of course, Barney Schultz was there.
Oh, yeah.
And Eddie Fisher with the Giants. Perky with our ball club here had one, and he later went to the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
There was a couple more. Kenny Johnson was with us.
All right.
Houston.
Hey, no hit you guys and lost it.
Yeah, that was an interesting ball game.
Did you play in that game?
Yes, sir, I did. The ball, Pete Rose bunts, and the ball, pitcher fields the ball and throws over the first baseman's head. Pete goes to second. The ground ball hit the short second, moves him to third, and a fly, sacrifice fly, we win 1-0.
That's got to be tough.
Yeah, that was a tough ballgame.
He played with you later on, didn't he?
Who's that?
Johnson.
He was with us earlier. He was with us.
Oh, was he before then? Okay, I get the.
We lost him to the Mets in that expansion draft where they had to deal
with the players. Yeah. He was a pretty good pitcher.
Yeah, he was a battler.
Yeah.
He didn't overpower anybody. He was just out there around the plate and threw strikes.
What'd you do when you left the Reds?
Well, the way it worked out, you know, that was a time when you were allowed to bring 28 players north.
Right.
First month of the season, you had to cut down to 25. Well, in 67, the Reds were also the greatest, just a great start here. And they had to make some decisions. Art Chamsky, Dick Simpson, and somebody else. They didn't have any options. And I did. All I was doing at that time was pitching. Tony was playing third base. Lee May was at first base. And they had to make a decision. And so with my options being left, they sent me to Buffalo, which was their AAA club. And Howsam called me in to tell me the story, and he says, Gordy, when you decide that your career is over as a player, I'd love to have you come back and go to work for me. I finished the season out. I went to Spokane, but I was later payment to the Dodgers. The Reds get Bob Lee from the Dodgers, and I was payment to the Dodgers for Bob Lee. They were in seventh place at the time, couldn't afford the luxury of a pinch hitter, so they sent me to Spokane. I finished the season out. That's not what I want, so when I come home, I make the decision that was my last year in uniform. I come down to see Howsam. He put me to work in October and I've been here ever since.
What capacity did you start?
Director of the Speakers Bureau.
And that's where you stay?
Yeah, in United. It's well, four states for over 20 years, you know, promoting Reds baseball, and that's basically what I had done, you know, until I got involved with this TV thing.
Well, from your the personality you project on television, you did, it's got to be an ideal situation for you.
Well, you know, that was the thing when we sat down with the wife and discussed it. Financially, there's been two or three more opportunities here in town that would have paid a lot better. There's no question about that because, you know, notorious baseball is, you know, office jobs are a big pay. And at that point, I told my wife, I said, you know, we're not going to starve to death, but we're not going to be rich either. And it's a nice thought to go to work every day and enjoy doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
She teaches school, so she had her thing to do, and she, you know, if that's what you want to do, we'll live with it. And here, you know, and it's been very enjoyable. I mean, I can't believe, in all honesty, to this day, that somebody paid me to play baseball. When I look back at all the things you mentioned, playing against some of the names, I was on the field with the Willie Mays, the Hank Aaron, hitting against Spahn, Brock Gibson, Drysdale. I was out there, man.
Yeah, and it's got to great. You know, most of us would do anything for that. I've got a son in college who would kill to play professional ball. I hope he gets a chance. But he goes to a very small school here, Berea College. Yeah, he's a left-handed pitcher. He's the ace of the staff of a very bad team. But he's
even left-handed boy. He's got a chance. They sure like, you know, if he throws strikes. How hard are you, know?
Gordy, no, I don't know. I've never seen anybody put a gun on him. I doubt he's not a. I'm about your size, and he is. I guess he got his size from Mama. He's about 5'10 and 160, so he's not real big.
Does he throw strikes?
He throws strikes. He does not walk anybody. He plays. I coach a Stan Musial League team, and we played the other day, and we went nine because we didn't have time to play two sevens, and he went the distance, and the only man he walked was their third hitter, who I swear is Mickey Mantle in disguise, the way that boy hit the ball, and I had him walk him intentionally.
What year is he
in? He's a sophomore. He's 20 years old, just turned 20.
Well, I'll sure turn that name in.
Okay.
What's your last name?
Kelly, K-E-L-L-E-Y. His first name is Heath. He's going to I think it's a Marlins tryout camp here on Monday. He couldn't get off work when the Reds tryout camp was in town. But he's already arranged to get off work Monday. He would love, you know, I don't know how fast he does not throw real hard. Just a moment.
Baby boy, I'm on the phone right now. I'll get it right now. I'm sorry.
My 8-year-old is coming and reporting. I'm sorry. The fact that somebody's on the telephone means nothing to him. My older boy, he doesn't throw hard. I don't know how hard he throws. He may get low 80s, that's all. But
it would be interesting. I'll check that out because if they can do a follow-up anyway, because you don't want to miss it. Of course, you know, they'll sign a little left-handed. They very seldom ever sign a little right-handed pitcher.
Right.
But they'll take their chances with a little left-handed. So.
Well, he's got a good changeup. He's got a good move to first. He's got a fair curve and excellent control. That's neither here. Well, yeah, there's not much difference except Hammond's doing pretty good.
Get the ball tonight.
Yeah.
I don't know if you get Sports Channel. I know we're on with Sports Channel tonight, and they're pitching at Ojeda. Now, you're talking about a crafty lefty.
Yes, he is.
You know, he didn't throw the ball over the white part of the plate. You know, he's away from the hitters all the time, turn the ball over, change speeds. He hates to throw a strike.
And he doesn't throw very hard either, does he?
No, he doesn't mind. He could black the eye. But what he does help up, it looks like it's about 1,000 mile an hour because he don't throw that often.
Right. Yeah, we don't get Sports Channel. We've got a farm, and I don't have a satellite dish because I want the kids to do other things besides. We don't. We just get the regular Reds telecasts. I wish we got more of them. You mentioned you were a pinch hitter. You were an outstandingly successful pinch hitter.
As a matter of fact, my partner, Steve Lamar, figured out he's really into computer stuff, and he figured out that to this point in my career, in the history of baseball, with a hitter that's been up more than 100 times as a pinch hitter, I still hold the record for the highest batting percentage.
Yes, 333.
Yeah. You know, there's some other people I guess are close, but to this point, there were guys who had more pinch hits, Smokey Burgess, and you know.
Well, that's all those guys did for 20 years.
Right. But, you know, it was really interesting because, you know, nobody wants to do that job. That is a horrible job. But I was a free swinger, and I left the dugout swinging. I never went up there and took a strike. Most pitchers try to get ahead of you with the first pitch, and if he threw the ball on the plate, I was going to hit it terribly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the approach I took, and I guess basically that's why I had some success. I didn't take a pitch.
Well, you say you were a free swinger, yet your strikeout, the free swinger today, as you said, 150 strikeouts. You struck out 60 or 65 times one year, and that was the tops, I believe.
See, that was the era that I came up when I mentioned. They had you so convinced. And scared to death of striking out was the most embarrassing thing. You can't contribute one thing to your ball club if you're striking out.
Mm-hmm.
So even no matter how big, how strong you were, if you had two strikes in you, go up on that bat and get some bat control. And that was just the way that they taught baseball in that era. And that's what you better do as a manager to get a piece of you to win.
Yes, yeah, and deservedly so. What about today? Do you still receive fan mail? You're high profile. I imagine that at least locally, a lot of people remember you.
It's increased in the last 3 or 4 years because more and more people are getting into memorabilia.
Yes.
And I have never been one that's ever refused an autograph, so I guess that word spreads. I don't charge for it and those kind of things. Of course, everybody's looking for something like that.
Yeah.
And I would probably say, in fact, I've got 4 or 5 here on my desk today, probably 10 to 15 a week.
Okay. Okay, and you do sign. That's good.
Yes, sir. No, I'm just, you know, thankful somebody wants me to do it.
Yeah, that's a good attitude. I've interviewed Al Zarrilla a little before your time, American League outfielder, and he said that, yes, it's just great to be remembered. He'll sign all day long if somebody wants him to.
That's exactly where I feel about it.
That's good. That's a great attitude. What about, now, you had a career that was maybe a little, well, prematurely ended. Any regrets from the career?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the last part.
Any regrets from your career?
No. The only fact, probably if I had known, and this is, you know, I guess second guessing, and you look at it two different ways, that the DH coming in, which I probably could have been very well with that, and the expansion, which, you know, arrived on the scene not too far after that, too. But then again, I look at it and think, if I had done that, maybe this opportunity wouldn't have been here with the ball club. You know, not a whole lot of players get a chance to leave the playing field and go up in the front office. They offer you scouting positions, minor league managing, which is not a whole lot of security with those things.
Sure.
And when Mr. Howison offered me the opportunity, I made the right decision. Because it's not like you're out selling cars or you're selling real estate or something. And I've basically been pretty much around baseball all my adult life, and they're still paying me for it. So, you know.
Can't beat that, can you? That's great. Well, Gordy, that about does it. A couple quick questions. Do you want to see this before I send it to the magazine?
You send me a copy of it. It'd be fine. You know.
Okay. I prefer to have the subject see it and approve it. I don't want